Hey there. Kanye West has decided to single-handedly take on the music industry, and it's a conversation worth having. But a lot of this comes in the way of Twitter rants and leaked documents. If you only know Kanye West from being married to Kim Kardashian or ranting about President George Bush after Katrina, there's so much more to know, and we're going to be here for a minute on this one. So get ready, because we have to talk. Hey there, this is Get Legit Law and Shit, and I'm Emily D. Baker, badass lawyer for online business. I've been a licensed attorney for over 15 years, and I'm a former prosecutor. So yeah, I know some shit, and we're going to talk about the legal shit you need to know. But don't worry, this is not another boring business podcast. So let's get started. I think Prince and Mike was trying to warn me. Kanye West. Yikes. The same song where he talks about being bipolar and how it's a superhero, but we can't talk about artists versus the music industry, and especially what's going on with Kanye West versus the music industry, without talking about both Prince and Michael Jackson. And we're going to get there. You know that I love breaking down the facts. And in this particular topic, there is so much context that we need to cover. So today I'm going to break down not only Kanye West's latest very attention-grabbing Twitter rant, but also some history of artists fighting record labels in the music industry, because A, it's super relevant. B, it's a lot of stuff I didn't know that I was fascinated slash horrified by. And C, when I go down a rabbit hole, I'm going to bring you all with me, and then we're all going to be on the same page with what we're talking about, because it's so helpful. So a lot of the facts in this instance are context, and then I'm going to give some of my impressions after reading over 100 pages of record industry contracts that Kanye threw up on his Twitter, you know, before he pissed on his Grammy. That video is still up, by the way. The link's in the show notes if you want to see it. It's on brand. He's wearing his Yeezys and everything. If you don't know Yeezys, Yeezys are shoes designed with Adidas by Kanye West. So he has a fashion empire in addition to his music, which is super helpful because it puts him in the position to have enough money to actually do all the shit that he's doing. So what happened? Well, on September 16th, Kanye started Twitter ranting about the record industry. And it started with quite a lot of tweets that were indicating which direction he was going to be going in. He posted a picture of Prince with, this is a fairly famous picture of Prince, but it's where Prince wrote slave on his face and was performing with that when Prince was famously fighting with Sony Music. And the tweet was saying, "Let's get it, big bro. You and Michael passed so we can live." He then asked, Well, this isn't really a question. Is this a question? No, it's not. It's a demand. "I need to see everybody's contracts at Universal and Sony. I'm not going to watch my people be enslaved. I'm putting my life on the line for my people. The music industry and the NBA are modern day slave ships. I'm the new Moses." That's linked in the show notes too, if you want to see it. So that is really what started. Those are the tweets that kind of indicated the direction that we were going in. And then between the 16th and the 20th of September 2020, there were quite a lot of tweets, not only breaking down his contracts, but then at first it was like, "Hey, my contracts are unfair." But then it was, "Hey, this is how I think the record industry needs to change." And I found that shit fascinating. I was like, "Okay, Kanye, like, he's got like a 7-point plan." I'm like, "All right, stop running for president and maybe just focus on this, because the 7-point plan makes a whole lot of sense to me." I'm not a record label executive, but plenty of people from the music industry have commented on one of my Kanye West videos on the YouTube. So I've actually gotten to see perspectives from people who work at labels and perspectives from artists and people who rep artists, which has been fantastic. We're just crowdsourcing information at this point, and I am living for it. So thank you for that. When Kanye starts ranting about stuff, he tells his followers that they need to go buy land. They need to own their own stake in the ground. This is something I tell business owners all the time. Like, you need to own your property. And that's not just your intellectual property and your website, but you need to have ownership in what you're creating. If I was representing musicians, it'd be really hard to say that to them because musicians don't own what they create. And if you're sitting there going, wait a second. So if you like write a bunch of songs and a bunch of music and stuff, and then you sign with a record label, you don't own your music. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly how that works. And when we dive into how the record industry works, you're going to be like, oh girl, this is some shit. And it is, it really is. I'm not defending the record labels in this case at all. I'll explain their business model as we break this down so that you can understand how it's working. I just think it's antiquated. And that's where Kanye and I surprisingly agree quite a lot. So Kanye then releases a screenshot of a conversation that he's having with somebody I would imagine is on his legal team based on the context of that text message. Now, please keep in mind, there is an ongoing lawsuit between Kanye and his record label. I don't think the legal system's moving quickly enough for Ye at this point. And a lot of people do complain about that. And when we get into some of the other famous legal battles, it's y'all, when I say years, it's like years and years of these battles. Kanye doesn't strike me as super patient. He's like, it's fine. I'll go to Twitter. We'll get this shit handled in a week. And was posting like who he was calling from different record labels and all this stuff. It was absolutely wild. So this is the text message that he tweeted out. So this is the other party talking, meaning we can argue that Universal and Sony have not supported you fully and that as a result, they have breached. This is a lawsuit slash termination nuclear option. If we went that route, we would litigate and ask for your masters as part of settlement. This is a high risk but high reward strategy. RE, masters ownerships, we can look into buying, but if Taylor's cost $300 million, yours would cost a lot more, I assume. Remember that if you re-record these songs, you could own these new masters outright. A much more radical consideration would be to propose an entirely new relationship or joint venture with Universal, one that is equal and not one-sided. I'm not sure you are interested in that, but if... this is a misspelling in the text, but it could be a Yeezy Media Universal joint venture play, but one where you have the power. And he responded, I'm not making any deals with Universal. So then he broke down how the record industry works in another series of tweets, saying, when you sign a music deal, you sign away your rights. Without the masters, you can't do anything with your own music. Someone else controls where it's played and when it's played. Artists have nothing except fame, touring, and merch. And then he goes on to state, we've gotten comfortable with not having what we deserve. They allow us to have a little money from touring, get some gold chains, some alcohol, some girls, and fake numbers that feed our egos, but we don't own our masters. He's not wrong, y'all. He's not wrong in that. There is so much more to his Twitter rant that makes a really good point. He says, artists deserve to own our own masters. Artists are starving without tours. I'm a get our masters for all artists. Pray for me. And then he clarifies his position and bargaining power, which makes all of the sense in the world, saying, I'm the only person who can speak on this because I made multi-billions. Side note, I challenged that number, but I'm curious. I couldn't find exact figures on Kanye's net worth without Kim being included to that. But I wonder if it's multi-billions. Fact check, but this is from Kanye's own tweet. I made multi-billions outside of music. No musicians make billions inside of music. I'm going to change this. Now, he's not wrong in any of that. The initial position, as I saw it, when he started releasing all of these tweets was that, and releasing the contracts, was that his contracts were unfair and he was feeling overly burdened. So then when I went and looked at the contracts, I was like, well, these contracts are inherently not unfair to you. When we step back and look at the argument in a broader way that the music industry is fundamentally unfair, it's a conversation that's much more easily had because his contracts are better than a lot of artists' contracts. And that is a point that is hard to get past when he's like, it's unfair. And I'm like, well, actually, You have a pretty strong bargaining position and really good lawyers, so actually your contracts are pretty fair. But the music industry as a whole maybe is problematic. I mean, for sure is problematic, and we need to talk about that. All of this has to happen in conversation around Taylor Swift, too. I have two episodes of this podcast about Taylor Swift, but in episode 6, I talk about her label selling her masters essentially out from under her, and without repeating an entire episode, because y'all, we don't have time for that today. We have a lot to talk about. Taylor's label was going under, so they were selling off their assets. Taylor went to Big Machine and was like, I want to buy my masters. Like, you're going under, you need money. I've got money. Let's do it. And now we know that that number was $300 million. I bet she could have swung it. And then they sold them to Scooter Braun, who Taylor has made no small talk about the fact that she hates him. Scooter Braun was repping Kanye West when, we're all intertwined, when Kanye interrupted her when she won her Grammy way back in the day when she was a newer artist crossing over from country. And when he stepped up and was like, Beyonce should have won and all of that. Taylor talks about it in her documentary, how victimized she felt by that, how disempowered she felt by that, to have a man jump up on stage and like grab the mic out of her hand and speak his mind. And Scooter got tied into all of that, and then tied in again into whether Kanye actually disclosed to Taylor the lyric in his song Famous or didn't disclose. And then there were leaked phone calls, and then there was just a whole bunch of mess. And then it turned out that Taylor was actually right. She wasn't told, but by then everybody had moved on from the story. So there's a lot tied in here with regard to Taylor and Kanye, but more than like Taylor versus Kanye, because I don't think that's as much of a thing. I feel like the Taylor Scooter Braun is a much deeper hurt, because now Scooter Braun makes money every time someone plays any of those older albums. So her work, her feelings, her impressions, her words, every time someone plays them, her enemy gets paid. Imagine how that would feel. I'm like, I'm with you, Taylor. I'd be fucking pissed too. Like, I can be petty, but look, that's just reprehensible. And I understand how she feels. Why her label wouldn't sell her masters to her. Money's money. I don't understand what went down there. And I hope one day I find out. I hope it's more than just like the patriarchy wants to keep control of these artists so that they can't ever stand up on their own and topple the empire that's making all of these men a lot of money. Like, I really just hope it's not that, because that's really dark. However, I want to know what you think about it. I want to know, do you think that the record label is just holding themselves up to prop up who's at the top? Is it just a pyramid scheme at this point with the artists on the bottom and a whole bunch of them feeding money up to the top? Is that where we're at with the record industry? Because it feels like that type of a pyramid. No, it's obviously not a legal pyramid scheme, okay? It's hyperbole. Just go with the example. So Taylor famously fought for her masters, also fought with her record label about whether, not her label, Scooter Braun, over whether she'd be allowed to sing her own music at the AMAs, because they own the rights to it, right? So she needed performance rights, and that wasn't just performance rights, it was also recording rights because it's on a television show. So it's a whole thing with who has the copyright to this music and who can do what with it, who can merchandise it, who can sell it, who can perform it, who can release it for a commercial, for a movie. Taylor doesn't get to approve that stuff unless it's in her contracts. The people who own the masters get to approve it. Now, in Kanye's contracts, he gets consulted on all of those things, but it doesn't say he has final approval on any of those things, which is really, really interesting, because he's not even the final decision maker on how his words are used. So in Taylor's new deal with Universal, which is maybe why Taylor hasn't come out in support of Kanye, because I've been like, where's Taylor in all of this? But Kanye is fighting Universal, and Taylor just moved to Universal and is pretty happy with the deal she got, because she's going to get her masters for her new music. And Universal owns a substantial part of Spotify, and the deal that Taylor worked out when she was negotiating for her own masters and her own new record deal, because she has the, you know, power in bargaining in her fame and her music and her popularity to actually say Like, this needs to happen or I walk, and they make it happen. So Universal owns a substantial part of Spotify. And part of Taylor's deal with Universal was, hey, if you are going to sell off that portion, the money goes to the artists, non-recoupable, which means the money goes to the artist more like a shareholder distribution than like an advance or a bonus. And this is not the first time. Look, this is not a Taylor fandom podcast. We're going to talk about other artists in just a second. But I didn't know that. Like, that wasn't ever part of the narrative that Taylor was standing up in her contract negotiation saying, I want other artists to get this too, which is a pretty stand-up thing to do. And the narrative around Taylor is normally that she's whining about something or is broken up with someone, which is a really unfair narrative. When Kanye pops off, the narrative tends to be more that he is either crazy or a genius. And we'll talk about maligning people through calling them crazy in a minute. But with Taylor, it's always, maybe it's not with Taylor. With women, they tend to be maligned in a different way. And it's through, oh, you're too emotional, you're too this, you're too that. And I see the narrative getting pushed that way with Taylor quite a lot. In a way that it's not pushed necessarily with male artists. And I've always found that a little bit frustrating, even though I wasn't really a Taylor Swift stan, right? So the thing I had remembered, because I didn't know about Spotify, but I remember when Taylor Swift stood up to Apple Music. So back when the Apple Music service was launching in, what was it, like 2015? When Apple Music was launching as a monthly paid streaming service, Taylor withheld her 1989 album, which was a huge album at the time, and still gets good play and good downloads and streams, it seems. So she withheld it because Apple Music wanted to withhold royalties for the first 3 months, and Apple had negotiated with the record labels to make that happen. And all the record labels agreed with Apple and were like, oh yeah, cool, you've got this new streaming service and you're going to make subscription money off of our artists. It's cool not to pay us for the first 3 months because Apple was giving away free subscriptions to get people into Apple Music. And that was when the iPhone came out. You got like the iPhone and 3 months of Apple Music. Same with new iPads and stuff like that. They do that often with their streaming services. And Taylor took her album and was like, no, I'm taking this and going home. You can't put it up on the streaming service. It was like 24 hours before Apple backed down. When I was refreshing my memory on this, one of the articles said, Apple just signed the worst streaming deal in history. You have Taylor Swift to thank. And Apple pays more per song, like 71.5 cents per song that's streamed, which is more than all the other streaming services. And they ended up paying it to all artists, even in that first 3 month period, which means Apple was coming out of pocket because subscribers weren't yet paying. And that is a huge deal. And so I kind of in the back of my mind was like, well, Taylor's been kind of championing this cause for a while, but in a different way. Kanye's like, you will not ignore me. Here are my contracts and me peeing on a Grammy on the internet. And that video has like 30 million views of him peeing on his Grammy. He's going to make a statement and grab attention in a way that other artists don't. So not only does he have the money to take the fight to the music industry, but he just doesn't care, y'all. He just doesn't care. Kanye gives no fucks and has the money to give no fucks. So he just goes for it. And he's like, whatever. I have flying fleets of lawyers. Come at me, bro. It's so interesting to me. But isn't that what it takes to make change? Isn't that level of, I mean, call it crazy, call it genius. Isn't that what it's going to take? And I think it is at the end of the day. So moving on from Taylor Swift, I didn't know this. And I always love learning something new. I remember when Prince changed his name. It was right around the time, like, Seven came out. I love that song. All seven and we'll watch them fall. You don't need to hear me singing. Apologies. But I was in high school, loved the song. And it was around that time that he changed from Prince to that symbol and the artist formerly known as Prince. And I didn't know the context. And I think the narrative was just like, oh, that Prince, he's so kooky. Look, he's now a symbol. What I was unaware of at the time and have later learned is that he was in the middle of a massive fight over masters with his label, and his label owned the name Prince. They owned his name. They owned the rights to Prince as it was connected to him. So he changed his name in the artist space to a symbol to gain some autonomy. And that is when he started talking about the record industry in the terms of slavery. And I'm actually going to read a couple quotes from a Rolling Stone article that really broke down Prince's arguments, because they're not that much different than Michael's too, but Kanye's arguments regarding how artists are treated in the industry. But I didn't realize that that was why Prince had changed his name until I really, really started researching it. So in 2015 was a big year for music to be fighting, because this is as streaming services are coming up and the music industry is changing and the labels aren't changing along with it. Prince told Rolling Stone that record contracts, quote, record contracts are just like, I'm going to say the word, slavery. I would tell a young artist, don't sign. Prince didn't get ownership over his old albums, but did get ownership over his future releases after 1996. The reason he did at that time is because he left Sony and signed with a new record label. However, in 2014, Prince did win his early masters in exchange for giving two new albums. And this is what they tried to do with Taylor Swift too. They tried to say, okay, one for one, we'll give you one of your old masters if you give us a new album. So now we retain rights on the new one and we've given you back one of the old ones. And Taylor was like, no, I don't want you to own me anymore. I'm not going to give up my future to save my past. So she chose to leave her label. They went under. She chose to sign with a new label and continue to fight to get her old masters back, which I can't believe I forgot to mention this, because it was the thing that shocked me the most in this entire thing. And I'm telling you, I read hundreds of pages of legal documents, but the shit that shook me was just on Twitter. Kanye West tweeted out on September 18th, quote, I'm going to personally see to it that Taylor Swift gets her masters back. Scooter is a close family friend. What? 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 Is Kanye really going to lobby on behalf of Taylor to allow her to get her masters back from Scooter Braun? I want to see it happen. I want to see it happen so badly. Because I feel like when these two artists collide, they're both passionate about making the music industry better for young artists. And I feel like those passions can work parallel to actually make change, because like the two of them and Drake have enough clout to make all of this shit change. Back to Prince. Prince also, when he started fighting with his label, leveraged a section of the Copyright Act. Well, Prince, his flying fleets of lawyers leveraged the Copyright Act Section 203, which under certain circumstances allows artists after 35 years to get back their original recordings from their record label. So it seems like the label wasn't willing to gamble that they would lose and rather be bought out than have a judge go, yeah, we agree, give him the masters and you don't get any money. So I think that was a legal strategy, but that's 35 years after they're released. Most artists aren't in a position to do that. Some are, but most aren't. And I, once again, with Kanye being impatient, he doesn't want to wait 20 years to get the masters for his newer albums. He doesn't even have the option for his older albums. So, Kesha. We have to talk about Kesha quickly, because I knew some of what was going on with Kesha and her fight for control over her music career, but it's almost a different color, if you will, of this whole debate over control of your music, control of your destiny, and control of your masters, because Kesha's is more of a forced work environment that she has been fighting to get out of for over 5 years. So Kesha alleged that the producer that she is signed exclusively with drugged her with GHB, which is the date rape drug, and raped her, mentally and physically abused her, and a bunch of other things. There are lawsuits flying every which way. Once again, folks, flying fleets of lawyers. There are so many lawsuits to unpack here, and we can do a whole episode about Kesha if you're curious. I'm not going to get into all of them, but in her contract, she was signed for exclusivity with this particular producer whom she alleged did all of these things to her. And she's like, I cannot work with this person. And her label will not let her out of the agreement and is forcing her to continue to work with somebody that she doesn't work with. And they have the right to do so. She sought a preliminary injunction to get a court to say, no, this is unfair. This is beyond the bounds of a contract. And the court was like, nah, you signed it. You have exclusivity. You have to honor your end of the contract. You have to continue working with this person who you have said in a very public way that you can't work with. To add insult to injury, there was also a defamation lawsuit. Kesha had texted Lady Gaga because that's, you know, that's a cool thing to be able to do. She's like, hey, Lady Gaga. She texted Lady Gaga about something that had happened between her and her producer, the sexual assault, mental and physical abuse, these things. Then Kesha's former lawyer, and I think this is what brought all of this up, Kesha's former lawyer, Mark Garagos, alluded on a podcast or on Twitter, no, on Twitter, that when Lady Gaga discussed in a podcast episode that she had been assaulted, sexually assaulted by a producer when she was 19, that it was the same producer that Kesha has been fighting with in court. Now, Lady Gaga and that producer both deny that that happened, but it seems that the reason Lady Gaga got swooped up in all of this and that there was a defamation lawsuit for things Kesha said to Lady Gaga is because Garagos was popping off on Twitter. It seems like that's how those things are all connected. And Kesha lost that defamation suit because the court found that the defamation, even to one person, she published it to even just one person in a text, was enough because it was unfounded. Oy. So Kesha is fighting for, yes, her masters, but in so much as she is fighting to not be forced to continue to work with somebody she doesn't want to work with, which is a whole nother side of the recording industry that we haven't talked about yet, but we'll get to, is the fact that artists can't choose to stop working with people that they don't want to work with anymore. And that, you know, you guys heard the Britney Spears conservatorship episode, forcing people to work in a way that they don't want to work always sits bad with me. It's always going to sit bad with me. It sits badly with me. I don't like it at all. And I can see why Kanye and Prince make the references that they do, because you are forcing somebody to work when they've said no, when they've said they don't want to, because you own them. You own their masters. So you own them and can make them work when you want them to work. Yikes. I think one of the most famous fights here is the Beatles. The Beatles have been trying, well, Paul McCartney and John Lennon, before he passed, have been trying to get their labels since like the 70s. And the trajectory of who owns the Beatles catalog is super convoluted. I'm going to keep it simple. We're going to break it down simply and quickly. As we, y'all are like, are we going to talk about Kanye's contracts? Yes, but context. So the Beatles have been fighting for their masters. They were sold from one label to another label to another label. And then they were coming up for sale because a label was going under. In 1985, Michael Jackson purchased the Beatles catalog, or 250 songs of the Beatles catalog, for $47.5 million. In that were also songs from Bruce Springsteen's, The Rolling Stones, Elvis, and more, because he was buying out the entirety of a different entity that owned them. Then there was a huge falling out between Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney, because in 1992, Paul McCartney had been talking to Michael on a joint venture they were doing, a song they were doing together, about how powerful ownership of their music is, the fight that they'd had, and that Michael went, oh yeah, that makes so much sense. I'm just going to go ahead and buy your masters. Now, Michael Jackson's estate actually owns a lot of his early music, not his group music, but a lot of his solo music, which was fascinating to me that he was able to get everybody else's masters and his own masters. But he was still fighting over ownership of the music after his first three or four albums. And there are, we'll get into the conspiracy theories in a minute, but there's quite a lot of conspiracy theories about it. So in 2006, Michael Jackson came across some financial hardships. I think you all, do you remember? Well, me, y'all might not be as old as I am, but your girl's not young. I remember some things. But when Michael Jackson was going to like lose Neverland Ranch due to bankruptcy, he was having substantial legal troubles. He was in debt to Sony. And part of the bailout agreement that he signed with Sony was that they had the right to option to purchase that catalog. So that means Sony could call in and be like, hey, we'd like to exercise that option. Or if Michael Jackson or his estate ever went to sell the catalog, they had an option to purchase. So it doesn't specifically say in the reportings I've seen right of first refusal, but that's generally what these things are in legal terms, meaning I get the first option to purchase it. And then if I pass, you can sell it to somebody else. That's super legalese, right of first refusal, but option to purchase indicates the same thing. So Sony took him up on that in 2016 and purchased it for $750 million. He bought it for $47.5 million and they purchased it for $750 million. Now, this is after streaming has gone live and all of that. And that's when you started seeing the Beatles music up on Apple. Do you remember when they were like announcing the Beatles catalog is here? It's because all this went down and that catalog got sold again. At the time it got sold, it was estimated to be worth $1 billion. $1 billion of worth in that music catalog, which I think gives context to how much money is at stake for both the artists and the record labels. Talking about what's at stake, when Kanye tweets that like he's putting this on his life, he actually feels and believes that he is putting his life at risk by taking on this fight. And there are lots of others who are with him. Kanye tweeted out, quote, "We used to diss Michael Jackson. The media made us call him crazy. Then they killed him." There are lots of conspiracy theories about whether the head of Sony, the record label, the music industry killed both Prince and Michael Jackson. With regard to Michael Jackson, that they actually sent the doctors there to administer the propofol and all of it. With Prince, lots of conversations and theories that he, in fact, wasn't using the types of painkillers that ended up taking his life and that he knew. Prince actually made a pretty chilling statement in an interview not too long before his death, when people were praying for him, saying, hold your prayers for a few days, and they literally found him dead a few days later. It's so crazy. Just the theories that are out there are not all like, sometimes you look at a conspiracy theory and you're like, no, I can't even. But some of these have a different feel and you're like, I wonder. Like it's the I wonder, not the never. And that's where a lot of artists feel like the music industry will do everything to protect its position at the top, and especially the CEOs of labels, and that they're just going to hold artists down. So that's where Kanye starts off the last part of his Twitter rant. Kanye said, "This moment is going to change the music industry for good. I feel so humbled and blessed that God has put me in a strong enough position to do this. Everyone keep praying. It's working. I'm on my knees this morning." He also said, "We're going to transparently change every album deal, every publishing deal, every merch deal, every touring deal, except for Drake's deals." Just kidding. I love Drake too. All artists must be free. Now, on September 20th, Kanye actually tweeted out like a platform, like an actual whole ass, well-considered plan for what this would look like. And when I had just gone through the contracts, I'm like, okay, I see the point, but what's going to change? So to talk about his plan, we have to talk a little bit about the content of the contracts from Kanye and the music industry in general. Now, the record labels essentially act as payday lenders. So they're going to front you the money today, but then they're going to take it all out of the back end. What we saw in Kanye's contracts were things like the fact that when there's expenses on an album, that the record label takes their cut out of gross. So all the money that's made, the label takes their cut, then they take expenses, then the artist gets paid. In most profit-sharing agreements, you have the expenses coming off first, then the cuts get distributed. So essentially, it reads as though the expenses come out of the artist portion. And that's because the expenses come out of the artist portion. So what I've seen in the media, what I have seen in my YouTube comments, and thank you all who have been on my YouTube channel commenting on these stories, because your insights have really helped form this conversation here, because the YouTube channel is more about like talking things through. This is where you come to get the whole breakdown in a logical format without the interruptions of comments and things like that. So some of those comments are that this is really common in the music industry, that if artists aren't careful and they don't look at the pressing and distribution deals, that they're actually paying for all of it, that essentially the record label is paying for nothing and taking no risk. But what the label would say is that they're taking all the risk because they front the money. So if an artist flops, they've paid the money. And here's the way this all works. The record label holds these masters, the master rights, all of the rights for all different artists and different albums. And they use the money that they make off of that to launch new talent, to launch them into the world. So the really successful artists are fronting the bill for all the other artists who either aren't successful, aren't pulling their weight, or are being launched. This seems to me the way that health insurance works, right? Everybody pays in, and then the people who have surgery, get sick, whatever, pull more out of the system in a given year than they have maybe put in because all the money's pooled together to make those expenses make sense. And at the end of the day, the insurance company makes money because, you know, more people pay in than pull out. This was what was going on in the music industry too. The really successful artists put in, the label pays out however they seem, you know, deem fit for the other artists. If they take some losses, it's okay because the successful artists, their catalogs cover those losses. And then they loan money back to the artists to make their next albums. And then when those albums come in and are profitable, then the album, you know, the label redistributes the funds from those albums. And these deals are years long. Like 7-record, 8-record deals are not uncommon in the older way that deals were signed. That's so many years and so many albums. The interesting thing about Kanye's contract is the options to extend were one-sided, which means if Kanye wants to get out of his contracts and the record label wants to keep him in the contracts, they can. They can take that option to extend. What? They can take that option to extend. He doesn't have to agree. So when Kanye is making some of these references, I get it. Like his label has thrown a lot of money his direction. A lot of money was spent on his albums and those monies were recouped. But he's not free to leave. He's just not. And yes, his negotiating position got better and his deals got better. And in the context of the record industry, his deals are really good. His early deals for what a lot will argue are his most successful albums, he only got 14% of royalties. And that's after all the other shit comes out. So 14% after everything else is not that much money, given how much the label has spent. Now, yes, they've thrown a lot of money at him, but the early records, he did not get as much. And as he proved himself, and this is really common in the industry, as he proved himself, he was in a better negotiating position. But when Kanye came into rap, he had already produced albums, and so he was not a newbie. So he knew this. He knew that Prince had fought this fight more than you and I would. He knew that Michael Jackson had fought this fight. He knew these things. He had lawyers. And he signed these agreements. So the record label's position is like, bro, you knew this and you signed it anyway. And now you have to uphold your end. But the world has changed since these contracts were signed. And that's part of Kanye's point is that, well, no one anticipated the direction this was all going in when these contracts were signed. And I mean, I think we saw the beginning of it, but YouTube wasn't around when this agreement was signed. Streaming wasn't a thing. You needed labels to push radio play to make an album grow. That's not the world we live in anymore. You get a viral hit on TikTok and it can put your name on the map. That's a whole different thing than a studio getting behind a whole album. And I know there are artists that are signing deals for 2 and 3 songs, not 7 and 8 albums, which I'm sure there are artists that are like, come on, I just can't get a break if these 3 songs don't hit. Right. If they don't, you're going to be able to take your music and go somewhere else and keep working. And you have all these free tools to build an audience and to build a following for your music. You can build on Instagram and SoundCloud and TikTok and YouTube. Justin Bieber was discovered on YouTube. There are so many ways to take your music direct to consumer, and the music industry knows it, and they are shook. Y'all remember Blockbuster? Some of you feel me. Some of you are like, what? I don't know what it means to be Kind Rewind. I've never had to do that. So that's fine. Blockbuster rented VHS tapes and then DVDs that you could go and pick up on a Friday night. You could go get a bag of popcorn, a soda, and a movie and go watch it at home. And then you had to go back to Blockbuster and return it in the little like drop slot. And then if you didn't, they charged you and they were like, you should have returned that 3 days ago. And you're like, fuck. I forgot Blockbuster. I Blockbuster and chilled and I got busy. I forgot to return it. And now you've charged me a whole bunch of money. And then Netflix came along and was like, hey, what if we just mail this to you? And then like, when you're done, whenever that is, you just like mail it back. And then we'll just like mail you the next one. And then you can just watch movies kind of whenever you want. And then we're going to do the same thing with video games and some other stuff. And people were shook. They were like, what? I don't have to worry about those late fees. And that was the discussion around Netflix when it was new was, I don't have to worry about returning it. Like, it doesn't matter when I mail it back. As long as I mail it back, I get the next video and I don't get charged. And that was really the marketing proposition. Don't have to worry about it, comes to your house. And I'm like, right, but have you seen the cotton candy at the Blockbuster? Like, that shit's good. Yes, Emily, you would bring it back around to snacks. Okay, look, it was good cotton candy. I dug it. I mean, it's probably crap cotton candy, but I liked crap cotton candy, so it's fine. And when my husband and I were dating, we would often go to the Blockbuster in Manhattan Beach, that's now a like medical radiology facility, and pick up movies and just wander the aisles and see what was new. And it was always really fun. So Blockbuster wasn't worried about Netflix. Where's Blockbuster now? Right. There's one ironic Blockbuster left that's been turned into an Airbnb, and Netflix has taken over the world. I mean, they're getting themselves canceled, but they've kind of tried to take over the world. Because Netflix continued to change. They're like, oh, you don't want them by mail anymore? Oh, we can stream them over this amazing thing called the internet. Oh, your computer at home has enough internet access to download or stream live an entire movie that's beamed from a satellite in fucking space? Yes, we're going to do that. You can take a movie from a satellite and beam it into your home and watch it without like pauses and breaks and not even having to download it. You just stream it. It's freaking space wizardry is what it is. But Blockbuster didn't keep up their business model and streaming took them out. Hey, music industry. Knock, knock. Your Netflix is calling. And it's called Spotify and Apple Music. And, you know, TikTok and Instagram Music and all these other things. So the purpose of music labels has shifted, but the way the music industry does business has not shifted. So, I mean, we're kind of ripe for disruption. And then COVID happened. So now you have a bunch of artists who have had all their summer tours canceled. There's no merch booth. There's no poster sales. There's no summer tour. There's no none of it. And they're not making the money. And they're really having a minute to pause, like all of us, and evaluate their lives and how they're being paid and how they're making money. And Kanye sees that. And he's not here for it. And I get it too. I also get the position of the music industry and the record labels saying, right, but we're a business and you all signed contracts and you had lawyers and we had lawyers and everybody said it was cool. So why are you mad at us now? Okay, so in my head, when I Because I see arguments. Like, I see the arguments on both sides. I am, if I am anything, I have been professionally trained in the art of argument and rhetoric. And so I can see both sides, like angel devil on the shoulder. Like, I can see Kanye's side going, but then I also see the business model side going, right, but. But in my head, the record label little, like, voice on my shoulder is is the King of England from Hamilton. That's just how that is in my brain. You know, cause when push comes to shove, I will kill your friends and family to remind you of my love. Da 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 da. Listen to that song thinking about the music industry, y'all. I swear you're gonna be like, oh my God. Oh my God, it's right. It's so on point. And Emily's not a trained singer. Truth. Which is why I don't have a record industry contract to complain about. But I feel like the record industry's like, you'll be back. I do. I hear it in my head. So the record industry is trying to remain relevant. And they have these super long agreements wherein they can just make artists continue to work like Kesha, even under really ugly circumstances. And I find that hugely problematic. But the industry is going to say, right, but we put all this money forward and we did all these things and we invest and we're going to win. Look, it seems to me from all the research that I've done and the contracts that I've read that signing a major label record deal is kind of like gambling in Vegas. The house always wins. I don't see a circumstance where artists really win. Yes, their albums grow. Yes, they can become famous. But we're in a direct-to-consumer society right now where artists can try to duplicate that in other ways. And I think the record industry does need to change. And I was saying, why hasn't anyone said how it should change? Well, y'all, I'm not going to say that Kanye West is just watching all of my content. But he answered on Twitter. I mean, not to me directly, but in a general way. But still, I was like, well, why hasn't anyone just broken down? I mean, are these licensing agreements? What do these agreements look like? There's a video of me in my car on the YouTubes where I contemplate these things. Once again, not a music industry insider. And then Kanye tweeted a like 7-part plan. So let's get into that. Again, this is all taken from Twitter. And for those of you who have regularly said to me, Emily, these episodes aren't long enough. You're welcome. And for Daniel, who's editing this episode, I am sorry. But before we hop into what Twitter said, I have to take just a quick moment to thank this week's sponsor. There's a sponsor, y'all. There's a sponsor. We're there. We're at that level. The Get Legit shop at getlegit.com is your stop for easy, no BS legal templates written by me. So though I am not your lawyer, you can have my legal templates that I write to make sure that your contracts are legit. Make sure your business is legit. And if you don't know where to start with legal in your online business, I suggest a privacy policy and website terms of use because it protects your copyright. And then you own your content, you know, unlike all the artists that we're talking about today. So be sure to check out www.getlegitshop.com. for your legal template needs. Kanye on Twitter. Point one, the artist owns the copyright in the recordings and songs and leases them to the record label or publisher for a limited term, 1-year deals. Shorter deals are a way to handle this. I think licensing is a great way to handle this, and I regularly recommend licensing to my clients for all different kinds of situations, because licensing, when you own your stuff and you license it out, is a great way to retain control and earn money for your shit. I love a good licensing deal. You're hearing me get all nerdy. It's like, Emily, seriously, calm down about licensing deals. But no, you guys, I love a good licensing deal. And Disney has like perfected this. They license Disney shit everywhere. You want a Dooney and Burke bag with Disney? You got it. You want a Coach bag with Disney because you're not a Dooney girl? You got it. But you don't like Coach or Dooney? Cool. We've got Kate Spade. So many licensing agreements. And a lot of those collaborations are licensing agreements. I don't know if the industry will go for 1-year deal, but even a 3-year deal is a better bet. The record label, point number two, the record label publisher is a service provider that receives a share of the income for a limited term, and the split can be 80-20 in the artist's favor. That's the structure of the proposed licensing deal. And yeah, the record labels should be a service provider providing essentially marketing services for the artists. And then you could have separate publishing and distribution deals for, like, if you actually print CDs and things like that, those pressing deals, you can do that separately from the label, and labels can run in a smaller way, and then maybe it brings the overhead down for the labels too. Point three, dependence. This was in all caps. This, he felt strongly. Artists must be dependent on no one but themselves to manage their catalog. You should need no one. Can you tell that was emphasized? That was me emphasizing it. No one else to understand the business you're in. And ding, ding, Kanye, thank you for spelling your right on Twitter, because a lot of people forget how to do that. Lawyers, again, in all caps. I don't feel personally victimized, but I might. Let's keep going. The first thing that changes about record deals is actual lawyers. We need plain English contracts. Okay, Kanye. Plain English contracts and licensing deals. Sure. Sure. You guys, I'm sorry, as I'm cracking myself up. Compose yourself, Emily. You're a professional. We need plain English contracts. A lawyer's role is to improve deals, not charge for contracts we cannot understand or track. Rewrite deals to be understandable from first read, all caps. I appreciate you, Yi, but if you're taking on the legal field and the record labels, you've got a lot on your plate. Lawyers make money the more you need them. So lawyers creating codependent relationships with their clients is a massive problem, because they get paid. And the longer it takes to read contracts, the more they get paid. Let me look. Your girl's got over 15 years of legal experience. I am trained in how to read contracts. I read contracts a lot. These music industry contracts are deep. However, people are assholes. And if contracts don't spell out every single freaking detail, it's going to be a mess. That is the way the entire legal profession works and the court system. But yes, the point that clients become codependent on lawyers is really valid. And I've seen a lot of artists complaining, my lawyer didn't even explain it to me. When you walk away from working with an attorney, you should feel empowered, not afraid. When you call your attorney, they should explain it to you in a way you understand. The problem is, with a traditional billable structure, the longer you're on the phone with the attorney for them explaining it to you, the more they're going to charge you. So a lot of clients feel disempowered because they're like, oh yeah, I guess. And the attorney's like, just trust me, it's fine. It's not fine if you don't understand it. And that's a valid point. I don't think restructuring contracts makes sense. I think perhaps like a table of contents, a breakdown, something that says, like, you know, kind of like the statements of fact, that this is what's contained herein, in a more plain English breakdown that's not the legally binding part of the contract, but is a good thorough breakdown to make sure everybody's on the same page. I don't think that's a bad idea. But until the billable hour structure of law changes, this isn't going to change. I appreciate you, Kanye. Keep going, because I think the billable hour structure of law is also outdated, much in the same way the record industry is outdated. But let's stick with one industry that's going to get super pissed off with this episode at a time, said the lawyer. Equity and blanket licenses are the majority of future new income. He's not wrong, folks. And then goes on to say, if you're with a major, he means label, you have invested your songs as shares in their, again, the right proper use of the word there, in their power to get equity and deals. Almost all new deals are now based on all songs going to the store or app. The equity is the artist's. No more blanket licensing. It should be clear from day one what shares you get now and when you leave. If your song helps a deal over the line you invested in, that store/app, same as they did. Not sure what the last part means, but thank you, Kanye. And then he breaks down royalties, and I'm going to do that and then talk about those 2 points together. On royalties, he says, again, back to dependence, you need a business manager to read how you did, ? So you pay to see your money, ! No more. Royalty portals need to show, and do not now, every song you delivered, every store you are in, how many streams per song and income per song. Asking for transparency in an industry is never bad. So what Kanye is arguing and highlighting is that without a manager, you can't get the information from the record label as how your songs are doing or where they are. Are they streaming on Spotify, Amazon, Apple? And then that's just the US market, because these are worldwide companies and worldwide deals. So to know how much your music's streaming in Australia and how much you're getting paid for that, he's saying, make it transparent. I don't know what that would take, but I feel like it's a whole lot. However, they've got that information somewhere because they're paying out royalties on it and they're paying themselves on it. So if they have the information, why can't it be more transparent? Or is that a way to hold artists back because they don't really know their worth? And that is problematic to me as well. So I like the plan. I'm not mad at the plan at all. I think there's a major industry disruption that's going to have to happen. And that is artists starting to, and Jay-Z started to do this too, artists starting to band together in their own streaming services, artists fighting for their masters, and new artists not signing. Because if you stop feeding the beast, it will have to change. I really think COVID plus the push into streaming plus the kind of direct-to-consumer nature of social media is a perfect convergence of factors to allow change to be made. I don't think it's going to happen as fast as Kanye wants it to happen. I mean, I don't. I was actually really surprised when going through his record deals, and it wasn't all of his record deals. It was clear that there were base agreements. And the thing about contracts is contracts build. So without having the base agreement, it's hard to kind of get a full picture for what everything is, because you have the contract, then the amendment, then the other amendment, then more amendments, and they take out sections and put in sections. It was a lot, y'all. It was a lot to read. And without the base agreement, it's a little, it's not thorough. Like, you would never consult a client and be like, oh yeah, I've got all the information right here, because we don't. So you can, or I can, because I do commentary, I can speculate as to what might be there, but it's kind of unknown. But what I was surprised about is that Kanye owns a label, and I had completely forgotten about this. Once again, not a Kanye stan. I'm living for his fight against the music industry. I got to be honest, I am. And there were things that I've learned about him that I didn't previously know. And I think it's really easy to put him in a box and be like, whatever. He's like started his own church and a Jesus Academy, and he called himself Moses, and he wears only beige, and. And his music has a lot of swear words, which I actually really like. I think it's really easy to put him in a box, like, oh yeah, he's married to Kim Kardashian. But a lot of these points are really, really valid. And he has the balls to get up there and say it. And this could very well financially impact him in a very negative way. And he does not care because he's standing up for what's right. And as an Enneagram 1, I just appreciate the hell out of that, because I... not to Enneagram typecast anybody, but I feel like Kanye West is probably an 8. Y'all that are into the Enneagram, please, please tell me in the Get Legit Facebook community if you think Kanye West is also an Enneagram 8, because I feel like that's probably the case. And my 1 can appreciate his 8. He feels like he is on the right side of this, and he is standing in his value. And it's not just him. A lot of other artists that have gone before have fought this same fight. And I respect the hell out of that. And I respect that he actually said, I'm going to try to get Twitter back. Twitter. He actually said on Twitter that I'm going to try to get Taylor back her masters. I respect that. I want to see him stand up for what he believes is right. What I don't love is when the media maligns him. And I say this in the comments on my YouTube videos. I say this in the comments on Twitter. Quick side note. On all of these Twitter posts, because I have looked at so much Twitter, there are always Taylor Swift stans. Like, first or second comment, like, Taylor made you. Taylor's more famous than you. Taylor built you. Taylor will destroy you. Every single tweet, it is freaking exhausting. Like, Taylor has stopped fighting this, you guys. Drop it. Like, just let it go. every single tweet, there are Taylor stans, there are Swifties in the comments with some mean shit. And that's not helpful either. But tangent about Twitter. I think that Kanye is in a unique position to fight this fight. I think COVID has brought so much of our lives into a different focus that we are able to really go, is this working anymore? And with the music industry, it's not working well. And the music industry was really instrumental in like getting airplay on radio and stuff. But radio is also an industry that is not keeping up as streaming is changing things. Do you regularly listen to the radio? During the last 6 months, have you regularly listened to the radio? I really am very curious. I want to know. I don't. I listen to Apple Music on my phone. I listen to the playlists I've curated. I listen to the suggested for you and the radio stations on Apple Music. I listen to podcasts. I listen to a lot of Audible. I don't regularly listen to the radio. And what I saw the radio industry do to some of my favorite DJs, shout out Kevin and Bean from K-Rock 106.7 FM in Los Angeles. What I saw happen to them really put me off of radio. I was like, this is how you treat people who are in the Hall of Fame for broadcasting. And it started with them dissing Ralph Garman. And I could go on this forever, and I won't, because y'all have hung in with me. Look, some of you have been asking for longer episodes. It's here. Here it is. But I saw the way that radio just threw people away. Like, here today, gone tomorrow. And it really kind of jaded me in that, because I think broadcasting and talking like this is a really, really powerful thing. And on 9/11, I did turn on the radio and listen to Ralph Garman talk through the breaking news that entire morning. And it was a point of familiarity. I wasn't going on Twitter. I wasn't going on Facebook to find that information. I was turning to my radio, to a voice that I trusted, to hear that. And to watch the radio station then later say, whatever, you don't meet our new demographic. He's a professional broadcaster. Yes, he's now a podcaster. But to see how broadcasters have been treated is tough for me. And same with the music industry. It is really cutthroat. There is another lawyer on the YouTube talking about this, and her perception of the music industry was, you are either the predator or the prey. That's not a stable business model for an entire industry. And that's what I love about working in the online space, is the collaboration. Not all online spaces are like that, but I've curated my online spaces to be collaborative. I'm on my friends' podcasts, and coming soon, they will be on mine. We have great conversations. We talk to each other's audiences. We talk to our own audiences. We build collaborations to bring everybody up together, versus you're the predator or your prey sticking out for you. And I'm seeing Kanye and Taylor Swift stand up together to do that to the music industry. And I really, really can't wait to see how this all shakes out, because it is a unique opportunity to make change. And call Kanye West what you will, he is a change maker, and he's going to be a change maker. And the media and the comments are going to continue to malign him for being crazy. He's been very open about his bipolar disorder, but I think it's careless and a little bit lazy to just be like, whatever, he's crazy. The man makes some really, really valid points. And when you write people off as crazy because you don't necessarily agree with what they're saying, there can't be any actual change because there hasn't been a conversation. Kanye has started a conversation, and I hope that we all take part in it, asking what's happening to the artists that we love. I feel very connected to the music that I love. I go to concerts. I support the artists that I love. And I think a lot of us feel connected to music in that way. And looking at this kind of underbelly of the music industry really does, at the end of the day, just make me feel sad. I would love to hear what you think about this in the Facebook group. GetLegitLive.com will get you there. You can link it in the show notes, because these are the conversations that we have in a safe space curated by me. Thank you so much for hanging in for this supersized episode of the Get Legit Launch It podcast. I appreciate you, friend, and I really look forward to talking to you next week. Thanks for sticking around for today's episode. For episodes like this and conversations like this. Come join us in the Facebook community. The Get Legit community is where we discuss the episodes, where I answer your questions, and we have an opportunity to take a deeper dive in a respectful, conversational environment. The Get Legit community is on Facebook. There's a link down below, or you can go to getlegitlive.com. I'll see you on the inside.